Damn, Charity. That was something. We have such creative people in our community. I love coming on Sundays like this because these are the days that really leave me with so much to ponder. I feel like meditations like that, they're so dense. Like, I want more than just that minute of silence to sit and think with that. And then Folius Duo, it's always fantastic to have you back. I like your version of what the fox say than the other version that we heard a few years back. Yours sounds way more authentic than ring, ding, 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 ding. Anybody remember that, what the fox say? Yes. And Folius Duo is the type of artist that gives us our dose of culture for the week so that we can leave with our head just a little bit higher and feel like I've listened to music with a capital M this week. Not just any of that Beyonce crap. This is some real stuff. That's some good. Thank you. Well, we're in this series called The Architecture of Belief. I said in pre-talk, this is the kind of series that almost every point and everything that we hit on could be a standalone talk. Each part that I'm trying to uncover leads to so many other things. In week one, when I started, I think I maybe got through like a third of the notes that I had written. And even this week's talk, I ended up kind of scrapping and setting aside what I was going to cover. I was going to talk about some cognitive biases that we have, which is always a fascinating subject, and talk about logical fallacies and the ways that our brain kind of tricks us. But after Ruth's talk last week, I kind of wanted to go a little bit of a different direction. And so we're morphing this series a little bit. And we're only, as I said, just touching on some of these subjects. There's a lot we can unpack. Week one, we talked about beliefs and how beliefs form in the mind, and beliefs are constructed. They're made, and they stack on top of one another. That's why we're using this language of the architecture of belief, because we construct beliefs in our mind. And then Ruth helped us move from the head to the heart and said that there is a heart knowledge, a heart way of knowing things. And then this week, we want to move to the gut where belief becomes behavior. And that's what I want to talk about today is how do our beliefs get lived out in our behavior? Now, remember just for context, we talked about in the first week that a belief is a mental model, a mental model that we treat as true, which helps us interpret reality and decide what to do next. It's a mental model, something that we treat as true. Notice I said we treat it as true, not that it is true, because beliefs don't have to be independently true in order for us to believe them. As a matter of fact, we believe all kinds of things that are not true, but it's a mental model we treat as true, which helps us interpret reality and decide how to act. So a couple examples, and I wanted to pick a few fresh examples than I did in the first week. So some examples would be like, my worth is tied to my productivity. That may not be a belief you may ever articulate about yourself, but if you look back and see how you act, your actions may say that that belief is how you live your life. Another example would be that conflict is bad and should be avoided. Now, that's an interesting belief that we inherit from oftentimes how we were raised and our attachment style and how we were taught to deal with conflict. And if we inherited a belief that says conflict is bad, conflict is dangerous, it makes me feel unsafe, and we should avoid it at all costs, then it leads to an avoidant attachment style, and that belief gets translated into our actions, and it affects our relationships, affects how we live. Here's another one. God is in control, and everything happens for a reason. You see, these beliefs affect how we live. And beliefs don't just float around in our heads. They're not just these loosely attached things that float around up there. They shape how we see reality, how we feel, and how we live. It shapes how we see and interpret reality. The fact of the matter is that you and I like to think of ourselves as objective, as standing with some distance and looking at things with objective distance. But the fact of the matter is that we are very much not that way. We are not neutral observers of reality. We interpret it through the lens of the beliefs that we already trust. You see, our brain loves the shortcuts, and if we were going to spend some time on that this week around cognitive biases, a cognitive bias is simply a shortcut that your brain has come up with because it takes a lot of processing power to think. And any time that our brain can jump and save a few steps, it will do that. So we develop stereotypes. We latch on to cognitive biases and logical fallacies that are these shortcuts that cause us to believe things that aren't true. Tom Edwards sent me this quote from Byron Katie this week that really brings this point together. She said, "The world is nothing but my perception of it. I see only through myself. I hear only through the filter of my story." The world is nothing but my perception of it. You see, belief doesn't only live in the head. It moves through the heart and then into the body, and it becomes visible through our behaviors. And once beliefs moves out of the mind, it starts leaving fingerprints in our lives, and it's visible in our actions. So in the same way that a forensic detective would show up on the scene of a crime, we've all seen the crime dramas, right? We know how crimes happen, and that the attractive forensic scientist shows up and starts looking. You start to put together a story of what happened based on the available evidence that's there. So what I want to do this week, that may be a little bit uncomfortable as we're kind of poking and prodding at parts of our identity and beliefs, is this. I would say that your beliefs are best visible through your actions. Our beliefs become visible in our bodies and through our behavior. Your beliefs are visible in your calendar, in your text messages, your spending and credit card statements, your attention, your phone apps, social media, your relationship. All of those things tell me what your beliefs are, more than what you say. The way that we choose to live and exist in the world tells the story of our beliefs. Annie Dillard, in The Writing Life, she says, "How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. What we do with this hour and that one is what we are doing." What is she saying? Don't tell me what you're doing with your life. Show me through what you do in the day to day. Because more than any beliefs we can verbalize, how you live your life tells the story of your beliefs. Because the gut is where belief becomes behavior. I'd love to get into a whole lot more on this because I find this quite fascinating, that there is a gut-brain axis. We are just now finding out about the ways that our bodies think and experience emotions. And we know through the vagus nerve that there is connected neural connections from our brain through our spinal cord, through our vagus nerve, into our gut, into our digestive tract, and that link the central nervous system with the enteric nervous system, which is these nerves that line our guts and our stomach. And neural, hormonal, and immune messages are passed back and forth between our brain and our guts. That's why when we say we feel things in our guts, or we can feel this tightness or constriction in our stomach, or when we feel our anxiety or our anger in our gut, these aren't just terms that we come up with. As a matter of fact, the language we use describes how we often feel, that sometimes the thoughts that we think inform our actions start a few steps back, that sometimes our gut is the originator of some of these deep-seated emotions. And there is this gut-brain axis that talks back and forth with our brain. So our beliefs aren't proven by how loudly we defend them, which is important for those of us who have come from any kind of a apologetics background. If anybody has beliefs that they've had to defend, you know the feeling of trying to prepare. It's kind of like studying for a spelling bee, because there were such a thing for Christians, you know, the Bible bees and the scripture drills and all the rest. You had to study to show yourself approved, a workman that needeth not be ashamed. And so you study and you learn, and you have to get the right beliefs, and you have to say them and verbalize them in the right way. But I'm far less interested with what we can verbalize, because what our actions are actually determine much more of what we believe. Beliefs aren't proven by how loudly we defend them, but by what they produce in our lives. So, for example, if I believe that rest is laziness, for example, if I inherited that belief that rest is laziness, I will struggle to slow down, and I will run myself ragged. My belief will become visible in my behavior. If I believe that conflict is dangerous, I will avoid hard conversations. If I believe that my worth depends on my productivity, I will say yes even when I am exhausted. If I believe people can't be trusted, my body may brace before my mind even knows why. If you've done any type of work in therapy to try to trace emotions and feelings to where they reside in your body and the memories that are linked to those feelings, you know that your history is not just simply a set of events that exist up here in this gray matter. Dr. Vanderblock says the body keeps the score. The body holds trauma, and the body is also the source of joy and delight. We know the memories that stay imprinted in our brain are the ones that are associated with the strongest amounts of emotion. To have an experience is one thing. To have an experience linked with and associated with strong feelings of emotion, with the neurochemistry cocktail of connection and desire and intimacy, means that those memories are becoming imprinted in your brain in a stronger way. We think and experience life somatically, integratively, with our whole bodies and self, with our brains. We process things with our hearts, and it becomes evident through our behaviors. Often the body will register things before the mind has even begun to put it into words. So when behaviors become repeated and are visible when our beliefs become behaviors through repeated actions, that repeated behavior begins to form our identity. And we talked about this morning in pre-talk with such a fascinating conversation. I would have loved to just take that conversation and have that here with you in a larger setting, because there's so much we can take away from this. What we do repeatedly doesn't just express who we are. It helps us create who we become. James Clear in Atomic Habits, a book that was quite popular a number of years back, talking about how we form habits and how things stick. He says, every action you take is a vote for the type of person you want to become. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you want to become. If I wanted to become a world-class classical guitarist and be able to play on the guitar as beautifully as we saw this morning, it takes more than me just verbalizing that to a crowd of people. I can go out and I can put guitar playing stickers, bumper stickers on the back of my car. I can wear the gear. I can talk about how good of a guitarist I am. I can buy the guitar. I can even sit there and I can master this incredible pose right here. Which, by the way, if you're going to be an instrumentalist, if you can have the type of instrument that gives you this kind of a setup here, I mean, like, how relaxing is this? This is nice. I can do all the things, but that doesn't make me a guitarist, right? You can live in your garage all week and still not be a car. Your identity is formed through your repeated actions. So our identities emerge out of our habits. Our beliefs turn into actions, and those actions determine our identity. You weren't born with preset beliefs. Every belief that you hold, including those about yourself, is learned, and it's conditioned, and it lives in your body, and it gets there through experience. The word identity is such an interesting word. I learned this week, and I've been really, this has probably been the most, the piece that I've been kind of processing the most this week. The word identity comes from two Latin words in its etymology. The first is essentius, which is where we get our word essence. It means your being or your beingness, your core, your source. And then the second word is the Latin word identitum, which means repeated. So your identity is literally your repeated beingness. Your core, who you are, not through what you say, but is lived out in your actions, your beingness. The thing that you do over and over, your repeated beingness determines your identity. What makes a world-class guitarist or flautist, says more is determined not by what people say. It's determined by repeated beingness, by doing the things that make a world-class musician. You may not be an athlete now, and you may not think of yourself as an athlete, but if you begin doing the things that an athlete does, if you begin changing your diet and eating like an athlete eats, if you begin going to the gym, maybe say swimming, and you start swimming, and you start putting in the time that an athlete puts in, you start watching videos, and maybe you even get a coach, over time, if you do the things that an athlete does, if you live the beingness of an athlete, that repeated beingness will determine your identity, and before long, you will look and you will discover, oh, I am now an athlete. Over time, I was doing the behaviors until those behaviors became beliefs that became part of my identity. So sometimes our beliefs form up here and work their way down into our bodies. But it's important to note that sometimes our body and our actions become the source of beliefs, and we can live our way into new beliefs. And next week, we're going to talk about the interesting part, I think, which is how beliefs and identity change over time. Because none of us believe the same things that we believed 5 years ago, 10 or 50 years ago. Our beliefs are changing. And one of the fallacies is that we assume that all of the change in our life has happened in our past. And when we think about the future, we project this version of ourselves into the future. But that's not the truth, because we know that just like we didn't believe the same things we believed 5 years ago, chances are we're probably going to continue to grow. And 5 years from now, we won't believe the same things we do now. Our identity evolves because our beliefs change and our actions change. Your belief and your identity is something that evolves. And over time, your habits are how you embody your identity. When you make your bed every day, you embody the identity of an organized person. More than reading about 10 ways to spruce up your organizational schedule, more than trying to do all these things, simply doing the things an organized person does makes you more organized. When you write each day, you embody the identity of a creative person, regardless of how you think about your creativity. When you go to the gym regularly and eat healthy, you embody the identity of a healthy or athletic person. A belief is not something that we just think our way into. Sometimes we also live our ways into it. What we repeatedly do, our repeated beingness, says more about what we actually believe. There's a whole talk I could give on how beliefs connect to values, because values are simply beliefs that we elevate above others, and beliefs about how we should live our life. And it's really important to spend some time thinking about your values and to recognize your values change sometimes. And the best way to find your values, look at your actions, look at your calendar, look at your choices, your relationships, your books. Look at the things that you're doing. That determines your actions, or that determines your identity. In the same way that a person could say, I'm a generous person, I value generosity. But show me your year-end giving. How much do you embody generosity? When you have opportunities to be a generous person, do you live that way? And if not, then that's simply lip service. That's not a value you live out. That's an aspirational value. So next week, we're going to talk about how beliefs change, how they evolve. Today, as we kind of land the plane, I want to ask this question as we kind of close. And I want to ask, what beliefs are your behaviors rehearsing? Because we said that some beliefs form in our minds and work their way down into our actions, but they also happen the other way. Before long, if our actions have a cumulative effect and they stack upon each other, we can live our ways into new beliefs without even realizing it. This is why therapy is so important, because a trained therapist can help you ask the questions to say, are you living this way because of the choices you are personally making, or is there some kind of belief you hold that may not be true about yourself? If you hold the belief that conflict is bad and should be avoided, you have to get to the source of that belief so that you can change the behaviors, so that you can learn how to handle conflict in a productive way. So what belief is your behavior rehearsing? What are the values you want to live? And for that, I go to Rumi, as I often do. And Rumi says, let your heart be silently drawn to the things that you love. Let yourself be silently drawn by the strange pull of what you really love. It will not leave you astray, is what Rumi said. I love that thought. It's easy to get down on ourselves, to try to form our identity that conforms with what we think it should be in this world, to shape our beliefs by what other people have. This morning we were talking about identity and different people were sharing aspects of it, and a couple people pointed to ancestry, and Leslie mentioned that she was Jewish, and somebody else later on was talking about their beliefs and said, I'm kind of like Leslie, and Wayne jumped out and said, you're Jewish? Which made me chuckle. You know, we take ourselves seriously a lot. I want us to have some fun with this idea this week as we think about our behaviors and the way that we're living. I'm not bringing this up so that we can get on ourselves to say, I should be more athletic, I should be more organized, I should make my bed, I should brush my teeth, all these things. Yes, you should do those things. But we're not trying to add more to our list of things to do because it's already so much to simply be in this world. We can take small changes to embrace a life that we want to live. We can pursue the things that we love. If we allow our hearts to be drawn by the thing that we silently love, if we give ourselves permission to pursue our joys and our whimsies, no matter how ridiculous they are, if we give ourselves permission to have fun and enjoy and experience life in all of its complexity, what belief is your behavior rehearsing? What values are making it out of your mouth and onto your Monday? Remember, we ask these questions with curiosity and not judgment, because I think the point is not to judge ourselves harshly. The point is simply to notice, to bring awareness, to notice what our lives are already practicing, and to choose small actions that more perfectly align with our honesty and authenticity of who we want to actually become and how we want to live and move in this world. And next week, as we talk about how things change, change can be scary, can be intimidating, but it gives us a freedom and a permission to know that our identity is always growing, and it's evolving. So thanks for having this conversation, and thanks for participating in these interior looks as we explore the architecture of belief. We're going to invite Folius Duo back up for another song to wrap us up here, and then go from there. So thank you so much.